The first attention is everything we are as average men. By virtue of such an absolute rule over our lives, the first attention is the most valuable asset that the average man has. Perhaps it is even our only asset. Taking into account its true value, the new seers started a rigorous examination of the first attention through seeing. In order to examine and explain the first attention, one must see it. Only seers can do that. But to examine what seers see in the first attention is essential. It allows the first attention the only opportunity it will ever have to realize its own workings. The first attention is the glow of awareness developed to an ultra shine. But it is a glow fixed on the surface of the cocoon, so to speak. It is a glow that covers the known. The second attention, on the other hand, is a more complex and specialized state of the glow of awareness. It has to do with the unknown. It comes about when unused emanations inside man's cocoon are utilized. The reason I called the second attention specialized is that in order to utilize those unused emanations, one needs uncommon, elaborate tactics that require supreme discipline and concentration. The concentration needed to be aware that one is having a dream is the forerunner of the second attention. That concentration is a form of concentration that is not in the same category as the concentration needed to deal with the daily world. The second attention is also called the left side awareness, and it is the vastest field that one can imagine, so vast in fact that it seems limitless. It is a quagmire so complex and bizarre that sober seers go into it only under the strictest conditions. The new seers let the mastery of awareness develop to its natural end, which is to extend the glow of awareness beyond the boundaries of the luminous cocoon in one single stroke. The third attention is attained when the glow of awareness turns into the fire from within, a glow that kindles not one band at a time, but all the indescribable forces emanations inside man's cocoon. The supreme accomplishment of human beings is to attain that level of attention while retaining the life force. Don't let your self-importance run rampant. Usually anger is very sobering, or sometimes fear is, or humor. Awareness begins with the permanent pressure that the emanations at large exert on the emanations trapped inside the cocoon. This pressure produces the first act of consciousness. It stops the motion of the trapped emanations, which are fighting to break the cocoon, fighting to die. For a seer, the truth is that all living beings are struggling to die. What stops death is awareness. The new seers were profoundly disturbed by the fact that awareness forestalls death and at the same time induces it by being attracted by the indescribable force. Since they could not explain it, for there is no rational way to understand existence, seers realized that their knowledge is composed of contradictory propositions. For example, seers have to be methodical, rational beings, paragons of sobriety, and at the same time they must shy away from all of those qualities in order to be completely free and open to the wonders and mysteries of existence. Only a feeling of supreme sobriety can bridge the contradictions. You may call the bridge between contradictions anything you want: art, affection, sobriety, love, or even kindness. In examining the first attention, the new seers realized that all organic beings, except man, quiet down their agitated trapped emanations so that those emanations can align themselves with their matching ones outside. Human beings do not do that. Instead, their first attention takes an inventory of the indescribable forces emanations inside their cocoons. Human beings take notice of the emanations they have inside their cocoons. No other creatures do that. The moment the pressure from the emanations at large fixates the emanations inside, the first attention begins to watch itself. It notes everything about itself, or at least it tries to, in whatever aberrant ways it can. This is the process seers call taking an inventory. I don't mean to say that human beings choose to take an inventory, or that they can refuse to take it. To take an inventory is the indescribable force's command. What is subject to volition, however, is the manner in which the command is obeyed. Although I dislike calling the emanations commands, that is what they are, commands that no one can disobey. Yet the way out of obeying the commands is in obeying them. In the case of the inventory of the first attention, seers take it, for they can't disobey, but once they have taken it, they throw it away. The indescribable force does not command us to worship our inventory. It commands us to take it, that's all. The emanations inside the cocoon of man are not quieted down for purposes of matching them with those outside. This is evident after seeing what other creatures do. On quieting down, some of them actually merge themselves with the emanations at large and move with them. But human beings quiet down their emanations and then reflect on them. The emanations focus on themselves. Human beings carry the command of taking an inventory to its logical extreme and disregard everything else. Once they are deeply involved in the inventory, two things may happen. They may ignore the impulses of the emanations at large, or they may use them in a very specialized way. The end result of ignoring those impulses after taking an inventory is a unique state known as reason. The result of using every impulse in a specialized way is known as self-absorption. The first attention works very well with the unknown. It blocks it. It denies it so fiercely that in the end the unknown doesn't exist for the first attention. Taking an inventory makes us invulnerable. That is why the inventory came into existence in the first place. The first attention consumes all the glow of awareness that human beings have, and not an iota of energy is left free. So the new seers propose that warriors, since they have to enter into the unknown, have to save their energy. But where are they going to get energy if all of it is taken? They'll get it from eradicating unnecessary habits. Eradicating unnecessary habits detaches awareness from self-reflection and allows it the freedom to focus on something else. The unknown is forever present, but it is outside the possibility of our normal awareness. The unknown is the superfluous part of the average man, and it is superfluous because the average man doesn't have enough free energy to grasp it. There is a force that is present throughout everything there is. It is called will, the will of the indescribable force's emanations, or intent. One of the most worthwhile findings of the ancient seers was the discovery that organic life is not the only form of life present on this earth. For seers, to be alive means to be aware. For the average man, to be aware means to be an organism. This is where seers are different. For them, to be aware means that the emanations that cause awareness are encased inside a receptacle. Organic living beings have a cocoon that encloses the emanations, but there are other creatures whose receptacles don't look like a cocoon to a seer. Yet they have the emanations of awareness in them and characteristics of life other than reproduction and metabolism, such as emotional dependency, sadness, joy, wrath, and so forth and so on. And the best yet, love, a kind of love man can't even conceive. If we take as our clue what seers see, life is indeed extraordinary. Those beings make themselves known to man at all time, and not only to seers, but also to the average man. The problem is that all the energy available is consumed by the first attention. Man's inventory not only takes it all, but it also toughens the cocoon to the point of making it inflexible. Under those circumstances, there is no possible interaction. In the life of warriors, it is extremely natural to be sad for no overt reason. Seers say that the luminous egg, as a field of energy, senses its final destination whenever the boundaries of the known are broken. A mere glimpse of the eternity outside the cocoon is enough to disrupt the coziness of our inventory. The resulting melancholy is sometimes so intense that it can bring about death. The best way to get rid of melancholy is to make fun of it. There is nothing more lonely than eternity, and nothing is more cozy for us than to be a human being. This, indeed, is another contradiction. How can man keep the bonds of his humanness and still venture gladly and purposefully into the absolute loneliness of eternity? Whenever you resolve this riddle, you'll be ready for the definitive journey. The new seers have found that the only thing that counts is impeccability, that is, freed energy. Pull yourself together and don't fight your fear. Roll with it. Be afraid without being terrified. Put all your concentration on the midpoint of your body, a true center of energy in all of us. Fear does not exist as soon as the glow of awareness moves beyond a certain threshold inside man's cocoon. I'll briefly outline the truths about awareness which I have discussed. 1. There is no objective world, but only a universe of energy fields, which seers call the indescribable forces' emanations. 2. Human beings are made of the indescribable forces' emanations and are in essence bubbles of luminescent energy. Each of us is wrapped in a cocoon that encloses a small portion of those emanations. 3. Awareness is achieved by the constant pressure that the emanations outside our cocoon, which are called emanations at large, exert on those inside our cocoon. 4. Awareness gives rise to perception, which happens when the emanations inside our cocoons align themselves with the corresponding emanations at large. The next truth is that perception takes place because there is in each of us an agent called the assemblage point that selects internal and external emanations for alignment. The particular alignment that we perceive as the world is the product of a specific spot where our assemblage point is located on our cocoon. In order to corroborate the truths about awareness, you need energy. Dealing with petty tyrants helps seers accomplish a sophisticated maneuver. That maneuver is to move their assemblage points. In order for our first attention to bring into focus the world that we perceive, it has to emphasize certain emanations selected from the narrow band of emanations where man's awareness is located. The discarded emanations are still within our reach, but remain dormant, unknown to us for the duration of our lives. The new seers call the emphasized emanations the right side, normal awareness, the tonal, this world, the known, the first attention. The average man calls it reality, rationality, common sense. The emphasized emanations compose a large portion of man's band of awareness, but a very small piece of the total spectrum of emanations present inside the cocoon of man. The disregarded emanations within man's band are thought of as a sort of preamble to the unknown proper consisting of the bulk of emanations which are not part of the human band and which are never emphasized. Seers call them the left side awareness, the Nahual, the other world, the unknown, the second attention. Normally, the glow of awareness is seen on the surface of the cocoon of all sentient beings. After man develops attention, however, the glow of awareness acquires depth. In other words, it is transmitted from the surface of the cocoon to quite a number of emanations inside the cocoon. A state of heightened awareness is seen not only as a glow that goes deeper inside the egg-like shape of human beings, but also as a more intense glow on the surface of the cocoon. Yet it is nothing in comparison to the glow produced by a state of total awareness, which is seen as a burst of incandescence in the entire luminous egg. It is an explosion of light of such a magnitude that the boundaries of the shell are diffused and the inside emanations extend themselves beyond anything imaginable. Seers who deliberately attain total awareness are a sight to behold. That is the moment when they burn from within. The fire from within consumes them, and in full awareness they fuse themselves to the emanations at large and glide into eternity. I've explained to you that the new seers aim to be free, and freedom has the most devastating implications. Among them is the implication that warriors must purposely seek change. Your predilection is to live the way you do. You stimulate your reason by running through your inventory and pitting it against your friends' inventories. Those maneuvers leave you very little time to examine yourself and your fate. You will have to give up all that. Human beings repeatedly choose the same emanations for perceiving because of two reasons. First, and most important, because we have been taught that those emanations are perceivable. And second, because our assemblage points select and prepare those emanations for being used. Every living being has an assemblage point which selects emanations for emphasis. Seers can see whether sentient beings share the same view of the world by seeing if the emanations their assemblage points have selected are the same. One of the most important breakthroughs for the new seers was to find that the spot where that point is located on the cocoon of all living creatures is not a permanent feature, but is established on that specific spot by habit. Hence the tremendous stress the new seers put on new actions, on new practicalities. They want desperately to arrive at new usages, new habits. A matter of great importance is the proper understanding of the truths about awareness in order to realize that that point can be moved from within. The unfortunate truth is that human beings always lose by default. They simply don't know about their possibilities. The new seers say that realization is the technique. They say that, first of all, one must become aware that the world we perceive is the result of our assemblage points being located on a specific spot on the cocoon. Once that is understood, the assemblage point can move almost at will as a consequence of new habits. The assemblage point of man appears around a definite area of the cocoon because the indescribable force commands it, but the precise spot is determined by habit, by repetitious acts. First, we learn that it can be placed there, and then we ourselves command it to be there. Our command becomes the indescribable force's command, and that point is fixated on that spot. Consider this very carefully. Our command becomes the indescribable force's command. I've mentioned to you that sorcery is something like entering a dead-end street. What I meant was that sorcery practices have no intrinsic value. Their worth is indirect, for their real function is to make the assemblage point shift by making the first attention release its control on that point. The new seers realized the true role those sorcery practices played and decided to go directly into the process of making their assemblage points shift, avoiding all the other nonsense of rituals and incantations. Yet rituals and incantations are indeed necessary at one time in every warrior's life, but only for the purposes of luring one's first attention away from the power of self-absorption, which keeps the assemblage point rigidly fixed. The obsessive entanglement of the first attention in self-absorption or reason is a powerful binding force, and ritual behavior, because it is repetitive, forces the first attention to free some energy from watching the inventory, as a consequence of which the assemblage point loses its rigidity. When that happens, if you are not a warrior, you think you're losing your mind. If you are a warrior, you know you've gone crazy, but you patiently wait. You see, to be healthy and sane means that the assemblage point is immovable. When it shifts, it literally means that one is deranged. Two options are opened to warriors whose assemblage points have shifted. One is to acknowledge being ill and to behave in deranged ways, reacting emotionally to the strange worlds that their shifts force them to witness. The other is to remain impassive, untouched, knowing that the assemblage point always returns to its original position. If the assemblage point doesn't return to its original position, then those people are lost. They are either incurably crazy because their assemblage points could never assemble the world as we know it, or they are peerless seers who have begun their movement toward the unknown. What determines it is energy, impeccability. Impeccable warriors don't lose their marbles. They remain untouched. I've said to you many times that impeccable warriors may see horrifying worlds, and yet the next moment they are telling a joke, laughing with their friends or with strangers. The mind, for a seer, is nothing but the self-reflection of the inventory of man. If you lose that self-reflection, but don't lose your underpinnings, you actually live an infinitely stronger life than if you had kept it. The flaw is in our emotional reaction, which prevents us from realizing that the oddity of our sensorial experiences is determined by the depth to which our assemblage point has moved into man's band of emanations. Man's band of emanations is not like a ribbon, but rather like a disc. The luminous shape of man is like a ball with a thick disc inserted into it. If the ball were transparent, you would have the perfect replica of man's cocoon. The disc goes all the way inside the ball. It's a disc that goes from the surface on one side to the surface on the other side. The assemblage point of man is located high up, 3/4 of the way toward the top of the egg on the surface of the cocoon. Heightened awareness comes about when the intense glow of the assemblage point lights up dormant emanations way inside the disc. To see the glow of the assemblage point moving inside that disc gives the feeling that it is a shift toward the left on the surface of the cocoon. The transparency of the luminous egg creates the impression of a movement toward the left, when in fact every movement of the assemblage point is in depth into the center of the luminous egg along the thickness of man's band. Man is not the unknowable. Man's luminosity can be seen almost as if one were using the eyes alone. The old seers saw the movement of the assemblage point, but it never occurred to them that it was a movement in depth. Instead, they followed their seeing and coined the phrase shift to the left, which the new seers retained, although they knew that it was erroneous to call it a shift to the left. The contention of the new seers is that in the course of our growth, once the glow of awareness focuses on man's band of emanations and selects some of them for emphasis, it enters into a vicious circle. The more it emphasizes certain emanations, the more stable the assemblage point gets to be. This is equivalent to saying that our command becomes the indescribable force's command. It goes without saying that when our awareness develops into the first attention, the command is so strong that to break that circle and make the assemblage point shift is a genuine triumph. The assemblage point is also responsible for making the first attention perceive in terms of clusters. An example of a cluster of emanations that receive emphasis together is the human body as we perceive it. Another part of our total being, our luminous cocoon, never receives emphasis and is relegated to oblivion. For the effect of the assemblage point is not only to make us perceive clusters of emanations, but also to make us disregard emanations. The assemblage point radiates a glow that groups together bundles of encased emanations. These bundles then become aligned as bundles with the emanations at large. Clustering is carried out even when seers deal with the emanations that are never used. Whenever they are emphasized, we perceive them just as we perceive the clusters of the first attention. One of the greatest moments the new seers had was when they found out that the unknown is merely the emanations discarded by the first attention. It's a huge affair, but an affair, mind you, where clustering can be done. The unknowable, on the other hand, is an eternity where our assemblage point has no way of clustering anything. The assemblage point is like a luminous magnet that picks emanation and groups them together wherever it moves within the bounds of man's band of emanations. This discovery was the glory of the new seers, for it put the unknown in a new light. The new seers noticed that some of the obsessive visions of seers, the ones that were almost impossible to conceive, coincided with a shift of the assemblage point to the region of man's band which is diametrically opposed to where it is ordinarily located. Those were visions of the dark side of man. It is somber and foreboding. It's not only the unknown, but the who cares to know it. The emanations that are inside the cocoon, but out of the bounds of man's band, can be perceived, but in really indescribable ways. They're not the human unknown, as in the case of the unused emanations in the band of man, but the nearly immeasurable unknown, where human traits do not figure at all. It is really an area of such an overpowering vastness that the best of seers would be hard put to describe it. The mystery is outside us. Inside us, we have only emanations trying to break the cocoon. And this fact aberrates us one way or another, whether we're average men or warriors. Only the new seers get around this. They struggle to see, and by means of the shifts of their assemblage points, they get to realize that the mystery is perceiving, not so much what we perceive, but what makes us perceive. The new seers believe that our senses are capable of detecting anything. They believe this because they see that the position of the assemblage point is what dictates what our senses perceive. If the assemblage point aligns emanations inside the cocoon in a position different from its normal one, the human senses perceive in inconceivable ways. The new seers are the warriors of total freedom, and their only search is the ultimate liberation that comes when they attain total awareness. Warriors prepare themselves to be aware, and full awareness comes to them only when there is no more self-importance left in them. Only when they are nothing do they become everything. Self-importance is the motivating force for every attack of melancholy. Warriors are entitled to have profound states of sadness, but that sadness is there only to make them laugh. The articulation point of everything seers do is stopping the internal dialogue. The internal dialogue is what keeps the assemblage point fixed to its original position. Once silence is attained, everything is possible. You stop talking to yourself by willing it, and thus you set a new intent, a new command. Then your command becomes the indescribable force's command. This is one of the most extraordinary things that the new seers found out, that our command can become the indescribable force's command. The internal dialogue stops in the same way it begins, by an act of will. After all, we are forced to start talking to ourselves by those who teach us. As they teach us, they engage their will, and we engage ours, both without knowing it. As we learn to talk to ourselves, we learn to handle will. We will ourselves to talk to ourselves. The way to stop talking to ourselves is to use exactly the same method. We must will it. We must intend it. Infants are taught by everyone around them to repeat an endless dialogue about themselves. The dialogue becomes internalized, and that force alone keeps the assemblage point fixed. The internal dialogue is a process that constantly strengthens the position of the assemblage point, because that position is an arbitrary one and needs steady reinforcement. I have profound admiration for the human capacity to impart order to the chaos of the indescribable forces of emanations. Every one of us, in his own right, is a masterful magician, and our magic is to keep our assemblage point unwaveringly fixed. The force of the emanations at large makes our assemblage point select certain emanations and cluster them for alignment and perception. That's the command of the indescribable force. But all the meaning that we give to what we perceive is our command, our gift of magic. The new seers say that since the exact position of the assemblage point is an arbitrary position chosen for us by our ancestors, it can move with a relatively small effort. Once it moves, it forces new alignments of emanations, thus new perceptions. Power plants have that effect, but hunger, tiredness, fever, and other things like that can have a similar effect. The flaw of the average man is that he thinks the result of a shift is purely mental. It isn't. On both edges of man's band of emanations, there is a strange storage of refuse, an incalculable pile of human junk. Any person can reach that storehouse by simply stopping his internal dialogue. If the shift is minimal, the results are explained as fantasies of the mind. If the shift is considerable, the results are called hallucinations. One of the most mysterious aspects of the seer's knowledge is the incredible effects of inner silence. Once inner silence is attained, the bonds that tie the assemblage point to the particular spot where it is placed begin to break, and the assemblage point is free to move. If the assemblage point moves beyond a crucial threshold, the world vanishes. It ceases to be what it is for us at man's level. I've explained to you that man has an assemblage point, and that that assemblage point aligns emanations for perception. We've also discussed that that point moves from its fixed position. Now, the last truth is that once that assemblage point moves beyond a certain limit, it can assemble worlds entirely different from the world we know. Without enough energy, the force of alignment is crushing. You have to have energy to sustain the pressure of alignments which never take place under ordinary circumstances. Warriors are in the world to train themselves to be unbiased witnesses so as to understand the mystery of ourselves and relish the exaltation of finding what we really are. This is the highest of the new seer's goals, and not every warrior attains it. To be a peerless Nahual, one has to love freedom, and one has to have supreme detachment. What makes the warrior's path so very dangerous is that it is the opposite of the life situation of modern man. Modern man has left the realm of the unknown and the mysterious, and has settled down in the realm of the functional. He has turned his back to the world of the foreboding and the exalting, and has welcomed the world of boredom. To be given a chance to go back again to the mystery of the world is sometimes too much for warriors, and they succumb. They are waylaid by what I've called the high adventure of the unknown. They forget the quest of freedom. They forget to be unbiased witnesses. They sink into the unknown and love it. In order to be unbiased witnesses, we begin by understanding that the fixation or the movement of the assemblage point is all there is to us and the world we witness, whatever that world might be. The new seers say that when we were taught to talk to ourselves, we were taught the means to dull ourselves in order to keep the assemblage point fixed on one spot. I'll tell you what my teacher said to me when I got to a certain point. He told me that I had been evicted from the home where I had lived all my life. A result of having saved energy had been the disruption of my cozy but utterly limiting and boring nest in the world of everyday life. My depression, he told me, was not so much the sadness of having lost my nest, but the annoyance of having to look for new quarters. The new quarters are not as cozy, he said, but they are infinitely more roomy. My eviction notice came in the form of a great depression, a loss of the desire to live. When I told my teacher that I didn't want to live, he couldn't help laughing. The position of the assemblage point on man's cocoon is maintained by the internal dialogue, and because of that, it is a flimsy position at best. We are going to talk about the great bands of emanations. It is another key discovery that the old seers made, but in their aberration they relegated it to oblivion until it was rescued by the new seers. The indescribable forces' emanations are always grouped in clusters. The old seers called those clusters the great bands of emanations. They aren't really bands, but the name stuck. For instance, there is an immeasurable cluster that produces organic beings. The emanations of that organic band have a sort of fluffiness. They are transparent and have a unique light of their own, a peculiar energy. They are aware. They jump. That's the reason why all organic beings are filled with a peculiar consuming energy. The other bands are darker, less fluffy. Some of them have no light at all, but a quality of opaqueness. Organic beings belong to the same great band. Think of it as an enormously wide band of luminous filaments, luminous strings with no end. Organic beings are bubbles that grow around a group of luminous filaments. Imagine that in this band of organic life, some bubbles are formed around the luminous filaments in the center of the band. Others are formed close to the edges. The band is wide enough to accommodate every kind of organic being with room to spare. In such an arrangement, bubbles that are close to the edges of the band miss altogether the emanations that are in the center of the band, which are shared only by bubbles that are aligned with the center. By the same token, bubbles in the center miss the emanations from the edges. As you can understand, organic beings share the emanations of one band, yet seers see that within that organic band, beings are as different as they can be. There are as many of these great bands as infinity itself. Seers have found out, however, that in the earth there are only 48 such bands. For seers, that means there are 48 types of organizations on the earth, 48 types of clusters or structures. Organic life is one of them. The old seers counted 7 bands that produce inorganic bubbles of awareness. In other words, there are 40 bands that produce bubbles without awareness. Those are bands that generate only organization. Think of the great bands as being like trees. All of them bear fruit. They produce containers filled with emanations. Yet only 8 of those trees bear edible fruit, that is, bubbles of awareness. 7 have sour fruit, but edible nonetheless, and 1 has the most juicy, luscious fruit there is. What makes those 8 bands produce awareness is the indescribable force which bestows awareness through its emanations. To say that the indescribable force bestows awareness through its emanations is like what a religious man would say about God, that God bestows life through love. However, the 2 statements are not made from the same point of view, and yet I think they mean the same thing. The difference is that seers see how the indescribable force bestows awareness through its emanations, and religious men don't see how God bestows life through his love. The indescribable force bestows awareness by means of 3 giant bundles of emanations that run through 8 great bands. These bundles are quite peculiar because they make seers feel a hue. One bundle gives the feeling of being beige pink, something like the glow of pink-colored street lamps. Another gives the feeling of being peach, like buff neon lights. And the 3rd bundle gives the feeling of being amber, like clear honey. So it is a matter of seeing a hue when seers see that the indescribable force bestows awareness through its emanations. Religious men don't see God's love, but if they would see it, they would know that it is either pink, peach, or amber. Man, for example, is attached to the amber bundle. But so are other beings. To know which beings share those emanations with man is something you will have to find out for yourself through your own seeing. There is no point in my telling you which ones. You would only be making another inventory. Suffice it to say that finding that out for yourself will be one of the most exciting things you'll ever do. The pink and peach bundles belong to other living beings. I've told you that the glow of awareness in man has different colors. They are not really colors, but casts of amber. The amber bundle of awareness has an infinitude of subtle variants, which always denote differences in quality of awareness. Pink and pale green amber are the most common casts. Blue amber is more unusual, but pure amber is by far the most rare. Seers say that the amount of energy that one saves and stores determines the caste. Countless numbers of warriors have begun with an ordinary pink amber caste and have finished with the purest of all ambers. The 3 bundles, with all their castes, crisscross the 8 bands. In the organic band, the pink bundle belongs mainly to plants, the peach band belongs to insects, and the amber band belongs to man and other animals. The same situation is prevalent in the inorganic bands. The three bundles of awareness produce specific kinds of inorganic beings in each of the seven great bands. You may want me to elaborate on the kinds of inorganic beings that exist. However, that is another thing that you must see for yourself. The seven bands and what they produce are indeed inaccessible to human reason, but not to human seeing. The great bands are neither flat nor round, but indescribably clustered together, like a pile of hay which is held together in midair by the force of the hands that pitched it. Thus there is no order to the emanations. To say that there is a center part, or that there are edges, is misleading, but necessary to understanding. Inorganic beings produced by the seven other bands of awareness are characterized by having a container that has no motion. It is rather a formless receptacle with a low degree of luminosity. It does not look like the cocoon of organic beings. It lacks the tautness, the inflated quality that makes organic beings look like luminous balls bursting with energy. The only similarity between inorganic and organic beings is that all of them have the awareness-bestowing pink or peach or amber emanations. Those emanations, under certain circumstances, make possible the most fascinating communication between the beings of those eight great bands. Usually, the organic beings, with their greater fields of energy, are the initiators of communication with inorganic beings, but a subtle and sophisticated follow-up is always the province of the inorganic beings. Once the barrier is broken, inorganic beings change and become what seers call allies. From that moment, inorganic beings can anticipate the seer's most subtle thoughts or moods or fears. The old seers became mesmerized by such devotion from their allies. Stories are that the old seers could make their allies do anything they wanted. That was one of the reasons they believed in their own invulnerability. They got fooled by their self-importance. The allies have power only if the seer who sees them is the paragon of impeccability, and those old seers just weren't. Inorganic beings are not as plentiful as organic ones, but this is offset by the greater number of bands of inorganic awareness. Also, the differences among the inorganic beings themselves are more vast than the differences among organisms, because organisms belong to only one band, while inorganic beings belong to seven bands. Besides, inorganic beings live infinitely longer than organisms. The old seers also came to realize that it is the high energy of organisms and the subsequent high development of their awareness that make them delectable morsels for the indescribable force. In the old seers' view, gluttony was the reason the indescribable force produced as many organisms as possible. The product of the other 40 great bands is not awareness at all, but a configuration of inanimate energy. The old seers chose to call whatever is produced by those bands vessels. While cocoons and containers are fields of energetic awareness, which accounts for their independent luminosity, vessels are rigid receptacles that hold emanations without being fields of energetic awareness. Their luminosity comes only from the energy of the encased emanations. You must bear in mind that everything on the earth is encased. Whatever we perceive is made up of portions of cocoons or vessels with emanations. Ordinarily, we don't perceive the containers of inorganic beings at all. The total world is made of the 48 bands. The world that our assemblage point assembles for our normal perception is made up of two bands. One is the organic band, the other is a band that has only structure, but no awareness. The other 46 great bands are not part of the world we normally perceive. There are other complete worlds that our assemblage points can assemble. The old seers counted seven such worlds, one for each band of awareness. I'll add that two of those worlds, besides the world of everyday life, are easy to assemble. The other five are something else. A shift of the assemblage point to the area below its customary position allows the seer a detailed and narrow view of the world we know. So detailed is that view that it seems to be an entirely different world. It is a mesmerizing view that has a tremendous appeal, especially for those seers who have an adventurous but somehow indolent and lazy spirit. The change of perspective is very pleasant. Minimal effort is required, and the results are staggering. If a seer is driven by quick gain, there is no better maneuver than the shift below. The only problem is that in those positions of the assemblage point, seers are plagued by death, which happens even more brutally and more quickly than in man's position. My teacher thought it was a great place for cavorting, but that's all. A true change of worlds happens only when the assemblage point moves into man's band deep enough to reach a crucial threshold, at which stage the assemblage point can use another of the great bands. How? It's a matter of energy. The force of alignment hooks another band, provided that the seer has enough energy. Our normal energy allows our assemblage points to use the force of alignment of one great band of emanations, and we perceive the world we know. But if we have a surplus of energy, we can use the force of alignment of other great bands, and consequently, we perceive other worlds. This may seem like an oddity to you, but trees, for instance, are closer to man than ants. I've told you that trees and man can develop a great relationship. That's so because they share emanations.